Welcome to another episode of Hooked on Score. I'm your host, Rick Urban, and today we are joined by film composer and video game composer, Phil Boucher. Phil is best known for his work on Epic Games' Fortnite and FireAxe Civilization VI, but he has also worked on many films, including Disney's Maleficent, Mistress of Evil, and Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Men Tell No Tales. So help me welcome Phil Boucher. Hey, Phil, how's it going?
Good. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Is it Caribbean or Caribbean? How do you say it? There's a big debate among people.
Oh, I say Caribbean.
It's whatever the director says, that's how
you
pronounce
it, right? Until the next one, and then you learn again.
Yeah, I think I'm at the point now with the Pirates of the Caribbean. I think I missed one of them, but I don't know which one it is. So I keep going back and starting them from the first one. But let's talk for a little bit about, you have such a big career and worked on so many different things. If you don't mind, maybe we can just kind of start from the beginning. How did you get started as a musician?
I mean, I was playing music in elementary school. I mean, I think everyone played the recorder in third grade, and then I can't say that one really drew me in, but then I got into the trumpet pretty early on, and I don't know why I picked the trumpet, but there was an orchestra in the elementary school band or something, and so I'd play that, and I got a couple little scholarships, and I'd play in the church sometimes, and there was just enough positive reinforcement for me to kind of keep going with it. And then I got into, 12, 13 years old and realized that you're not going to get a girlfriend playing the trumpet. So I started playing the guitar and kind of picked that up and did the...
So much of being a musician or any creative field is attracting a significant other.
I mean, especially at that age, right? Everything is about, okay, how can I get a girlfriend? And I went to an all-boys school, so options were limited and I had to think outside the box.
So you had to make sure the concerts were outside of the school in the community somewhere, right? Where you could find...
And then there was the rude awakening. You get into a band and you go to the concert and it's just all the dudes that look just like you. And okay, so maybe I have to rethink this again. But I mean, I stuck with it. I ended up going to Berklee College of Music. Didn't really know what I wanted to do. I liked playing guitar and I was getting into recording. The film scoring thing didn't really hit me until about halfway through. I was making concept albums and I was really drawn to story-driven songs and things more than writing a song about my own feelings. I hated writing lyrics that had anything to do with me. They were always about some larger concept. And one day it just sort of clicked that there's a career path out there for people that are too shy to sing about their feelings but have a story to tell or something.
And you were going to Berklee for guitar, is that right? You weren't going for film
composition? Right, so I started, you have to have a principal instrument. So I went in there as a guitarist, knowing that I was not intending to make a career out of being a guitarist, because if you just want to be in a band, I'm sorry, but I don't understand why you need a formal education if that's the thing that you want to do. So I was more interested in the engineering side of things, and I'd always recorded my own stuff, and I had one of those early Tascam cassettes that was a four-track recorder, and you'd record two tracks on one side and flip the cassette over and you'd get two tracks on the other side. I was just always interested in the music technology side of things. And then, so anyway, I switched to film scoring. I completed both degrees, and then I had to move somewhere after college to get a job. And everyone said that the options were New York and LA, and I'm from Boston, and I thought I would like New York, and I went there, and the vibe didn't work for me. So I moved to LA, sight unseen, had no plans of what I was going to do when I got here. Just through sheer luck, managed to get a job as an assistant to a composer literally the day I moved to LA. I emailed a person at the right time. He had another company, and he said, "We're not hiring for that company right now, but my assistant quit today. Do you want to come interview for that?" And he was another Berklee guy. His name was Richard Gibbs. And we just hit it off, and I worked for him for a little bit and bounced around with a couple other composers. Eventually,
So it's literally a knocking on the door through email kind of story,
Well, everyone
right?
says, and it's true, you can't really plan for that job. You can't email someone 6 months out and say, hey, I'm going to move to LA. Are you going to need an assistant in 6 months? Because no one knows. Everyone holds on to their assistant for dear life until they either get too big for their britches or they move up through the ranks or something, or you find a composer that didn't need one and suddenly has a big project and has to bring in some help. Anyway, bounced around a little bit for a couple of years. I eventually got into remote control, Hans Zimmer's place, and I assisted a composer named Jeff Zanelli for just about 5 years, sort of, you know, starting at the bottom and doing a little bit of sound design and synth design, and then starting to do little arrangements and blossoming into full cues and, you know, taking on more and more responsibility as the years went on, until I sort of outgrew that. Mm-hmm. Like I'm saying, you know, people, there's sort of a lifespan of being an assistant to somebody, unless that's really what you want to do. So I stuck around there for a few years and just rented a space and was continuing to get work from some of the composers there. And then it was just time to, you know, go out on my own and do my own thing.
And for most composers know this, but for our listeners that don't know, Remote Control is sort of this campus in the middle of Santa Monica that Hans Zimmer has. It's almost like a very upscale dorm facility for composers, but like the biggest names in Hollywood with the biggest equipment. And there's, you know, everything you can think of, from a recording studio type space to like a full eat-in kitchen and everything like that, and a chef. I was interning there with Henry Jackman for a while, and I remember there was like a chef that came in and kind of cooked for everybody, and it was just this amazing collaborative place. Sometimes, because oftentimes people were in their studios, you know, you wouldn't see them for days on end just because they were working on a particular project or something like that. So when you entered, did you enter as an assistant or as an intern? Like, how, what was your status when you
entered?
I entered
as an assistant, so I managed to bypass sort of the first rung of the ladder. A lot of people know Satnam Ramgotra. He's a percussionist who plays with Hans Zimmer live, and he's played on his scores for years. And I had just met him because he was doing something for someone I was working for before. And we kind of stayed in touch, and he forwarded my resume to Jeff, who was just looking for an assistant at the time. So, you know, just stars aligned, and I got that opportunity, and then I just held on and got my foot in the door.
It's such a great space to be in as a composer, because, you know, you're sort of walking with giants. You know, you can just kind of weave and walk around, and, you know, you're passing Hans in the hallway and things like that sometimes. And I don't know, I found it kind of an inspirational place. And it also kind of has a almost corporate environment to it, where it almost keeps you on task, would you say, more than like a home studio does?
There's a lot that I picked up on, and a lot that just sort of resonated with me about the way that they do things there, just in terms of, you know, they're working on $200 million movies, and everyone understands what that means, and anyone that doesn't last very long. So, you know, everyone checks all their work 5 times. Everyone makes sure that if you have a deadline, you don't miss your deadline. And everyone's also just really up on technology, and it was a really collaborative environment, especially as an assistant. Everyone's helping each other figure out the tech, because there's a lot of stuff there that you couldn't be exposed to before you were there, because Hans has his own samples and his own computers and his own way of doing things that you just have to pick up on really quickly.
Yeah, you kind of have to be an expert on technology you didn't know existed, or, you know, proprietary software you didn't, you know, you don't
Absolutely.
Know how it works. Wow, so you must have a pretty incredible learning curve for things like that. Have you always been kind of a gearhead, so to speak?
I think so. I mean, there's certainly people out there that go way deeper than I do, but I've always been fascinated in the technology side of things. I've always used samples and DAWs to write. You know, I've never been the pencil and paper guy, as much as I kind of wish that I had that skill. It's not something that I, you know, I can pick up a guitar and write a song, but I can't write an orchestral work without putting it into a DAW.
Yeah, I think there's, that is, it's almost the preferred way of doing it these days, because like for me, for instance, I was classically trained. So, you know, I was a big fan of writing everything out in Sibelius and then putting it into my DAW, and there's just not time to do that, especially these days.
The other big thing about music in the last 10 or 15 years is it's so much more about what something sounds like. It's not enough to say that this is going to be a solo violin. It's going to be, who's the player? How are you going to mic it? What's the space that it's in? You know, and that goes for everything. It goes for the synth textures. It goes for the percussion. The whole spectrum of music is now informed by the production of it, not just the notes.
And I can definitely hear that, the high level of production in your music. It doesn't really seem that intensely guitar driven. It seems like you've versed yourself in all the entire gambit of the orchestra and the synth sounds and percussion and everything like that. So when you started to, you were at Remote, and then you started composing for video games. How did that come about?
It's interesting, actually. It sort of happened by accident. I mean, looking back, I can sort of make all the connections, but at the time, it just sort of felt like it kind of fell into my lap. My best friend in college, this guy named Chris D'Ambrosio, first he went to New York, and then he was down in San Diego working as a sound designer at a game studio. And he's like, there's a bunch of game studios down here. We get together like once a month, all the audio guys come out, we meet at a brewery because there's breweries everywhere in San Diego. And we get together and we just shoot the shit and talk about whatever. He's like, you should come down. Mm-hmm. Like, all right, but like, I don't work for these companies. I'm just like a lowly assistant. I hadn't been working for Jeff for too long. And I was like, I'd have nothing to say to these people. He's like, no, they're all nice, just come down. So I went down a couple times, and he introduced me to, you know, some of the guys that he was good friends with. And after going down a few times, I started to develop my own friendships with these people. But it was never a networking thing. It was never about, you know, giving someone my demo, because I was aware of my place in the world and aware that it didn't do me any good to try to get a job from one of these people. Fast forward like 5 years, and out of the blue, I was talking with one of them one day, and he's like, hey, we've got this game coming up. I want you to pitch for it. And I was like, really? He's like, yeah, I've been trying to get you on something for years. And like, that was news to me. He never asked me for anything. He never told me. And I'm glad, because I wouldn't have been ready.
It's like, my phone's been there. It hasn't been ringing. My email box, I've been checking it a couple times a day. No, but it's funny how people, if you make an impression on people that you're actually interested in their project and in their storytelling, that they remember you. And I think there's so many people go into networking thinking about just promoting themselves. They don't realize that the people that want to work with you want to work with you and your voice. They don't want to work with somebody that's just trying to promote themselves. You know, they want to work with a human being and a personality. So it sounds like you knew that already.
Maybe subconsciously, you know, I knew that I shouldn't be hawking my demo on people, but it really was just, you know, we listened to a lot of the same music and we liked the same games, and we just started to talk about the same things. He had never listened to my music as far as I knew when he put me up for something. So it wasn't even about whether or not I could write music. He just sort of assumed that I could, which is nice. And then I had to, you know, get the opportunity to prove that. But it was so much more about the friendship and the personal connection. And out of that core group, there was four or five guys that were all working at the same studio. And then what often happens with game studios is they're short-lived. You know, a big game comes out and the studio just lays off 70% of its staff because they don't need all those people anymore. So what happens is every few years, a lot of these people just start to migrate, And I stayed in touch with these people. So suddenly it went from knowing five sound designers at one studio to knowing one sound designer at five different studios. And then, thankfully, a few of them kept coming back to me and saying, hey, now I have a project, and now I have a project. And they're not handing me gigs, but they're handing me the opportunity, at least, which is massive.
Yeah. And if you, it sounds like you were smart enough to have, like you were saying, you can't prepare for when that opportunity arises. So when somebody says, hey, pitch for this video game, you are at the technical capability to be able to produce something that could be useful in a video game, you know, because that's the name of the game is they want. It's funny, you think about it from so many different ends of it. It's just about making somebody else's job easier. I guess that sounds bad, but not really. Like, you're making them want to hire you. You know, they like your music so much. They like you as a person. They want to hire you because they know you're going to do a good job and they're going to look good. Not as a selfish way, but, you know, it's going to be a better, it's going to be a better product.
Right. Well, and the other thing that I think people are looking for, not to put words in their mouths, but they saw that
Oh, we can put words in people's mouths.
They saw that I had been at Remote, and so they, you know, like we talked about, they knew what that infrastructure was like and what the pressure is like, so that they knew that I could deliver something on time and there wasn't going to be any problems with technical deliverables or, you know, flaking and not answering an email for 2 weeks or something. So more than the music, it was, this guy's reliable and we know that it's one less headache that we have to worry about.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. Less headaches for the person that hires you is, yeah, that's a great way of putting it. So a little game called Fortnite came out a while ago and sort of took over the world. How did that come about? How did you come to working on Fortnite?
Well, that's also interesting because it's the one game that I've been involved with that has nothing to do with that core group of guys that I was talking about. I have a website and there's a little contact portal on it that you can send me a message and it goes to my email. And one day I just got this message from this person with an Epic Games email address. And it said, hi, I wondered if you have time to talk about something. We have an opportunity that we think you might be suited for. And suddenly, I'm asking around because I know what Epic Games does. You know, I know that Fortnite was already, the biggest game in the world at that point. And I started asking all my friends, like, okay, do you guys know someone there? Did you put me up for something that I don't know? And they all said, no, we don't know about it. I had this initial Zoom call with them, met them, and they start talking as if I already have the job and as if I know what they're talking about. They're saying like, oh, we've got this cinematic coming up and it's a pirate themed and like, how soon do you think you can get us a version or whatever it was? And if we get to the end of the call, I'm like, okay, before we go, I have to ask, like, how did you find me? Because, I'm far from a household name, even.
Like, have you been talking to another Phil for, several months, and I'm just jumping in here?
I probably could have never asked, and it would have just, we would have kept working together, and I would have always bugged me. But I was like, I have to know how you found me. And they found me from IMDb, of all things. They were starting season 8. Which was a pirate-themed season, and Zach Balika, he's not the audio director, he's director of audio production, I think is his official title. He's a really great guy, and he's like, we're doing a pirate season. Oh, who worked on the last Pirates of the Caribbean movie? And for whatever reason,
wow.
He, out of the list of names, I did additional music along with three or four other composers, and then there was Jeff Zanelli, my former boss, who was the main composer. And then obviously we're using Hans's themes. But for whatever reason, he clicked on my name, saw that I had worked on a few other video games, went to my website, heard a couple things that he liked, and decided to give me a chance. Which is one of the things that they tell you, people at home can't see the air quotes, but one of the things that they say is additional music gigs will never help you to get the lead gig. You know, they always say additional music only leads to more additional music. And this is a firm case of that not being true, because they just found my name there and decided to give me a chance. And now 2 years later, I'm still working on it.
Well, and video game, especially, it's such a big field of people that work on video games. And it's kind of becoming that way with films as well, where, you know, like you were saying on the Pirates movie, there was one main name composer, but so many different people put an additional music here and there. And, you know, video game creators are probably used to that. It probably doesn't throw them. It's like, oh, what do you mean? Hans Zimmer didn't write every single note of music in this movie? Oh, there was, like, they probably, it was very natural. It's like, oh yeah, he was one of the people that created the music for this thing. Let's investigate him a little bit for this project.
Yeah, you're probably right.
So, yeah. So with the actual gameplay itself, I mean, Fortnite, I mean, obviously it's interactive, but it's so unpredictable. How does, like, what did you have to deliver? Did you have to deliver loops, or were you dealing with cues like you went on a film? What was, like, the actual delivery? Like?
That first one was pretty much just straight ahead. Here's a 1 minute trailer for the new season. Score it like you would score any other cue. So it was, I mean, other than it being a trailer, so it's a little bit more of a commercial than it is a underscore cue. It was linear. It was very straightforward. And I did a couple little stingers for that season, you know, just, which stingers for me are the hardest thing to do, because you have 1 to 3 seconds to convey whatever it is that they want. And yeah, it's either right or it's wrong. You know, you write a 1 minute cue and you can talk about it and say, well, we want to shade this here and this isn't quite working. But if you picked the wrong chord for the emotion, that's just the wrong chord or the wrong instrumentation. There's not a lot of wiggle room. But over time with Fortnite, it's evolved. We've gotten into doing a lot more music for in the game. So there'll be different bosses or different non-player characters that show up, or locations that need some music that might loop for that particular area.
So you're just kind of delivering music and letting them sort of deal with the cutting it up and putting it where it needs to be. Is that kind of the role of the video game composer at this point?
At least for me. All the different studios that I work with, they all implement the music themselves, which is great because it's one less thing for me to worry about. You know, sometimes it's frustrating. You hand off the music and you just have to cross your fingers that the people hook it up correctly and understand how it's supposed to work. But as long as you, like, you know, I have relationships with all these people now, and they usually send me something once they've put it in the game to check out. And, you know, every once in a while, it's like, oh, this bit's supposed to go over here and this is supposed to go over here, and some wires just get crossed or something. But honestly, it's when you work with good people and a good audio team, they're gonna make your music sound better than you could have if you were in charge of it.
And overall, for Fortnite, you think you can put your thumb on a particular reason why it became such this huge phenomena? Like, it kind of took over the world, the landscape. You know, everybody was playing it. It wasn't just gamers at a certain point. And it seemed like they were only playing it, too. It sort of pushed everything else to the side. And it was attracting, I think, younger video gamers that normally wouldn't play that type of game. It was attracting people outside of the world of video games to play this game. Like, why did it take over everything, do you think? You have any idea?
It's a hard question. Fascinating, but because by the time I was involved, it already was this massive thing that it is.
Yeah.
I don't know that anyone knew what it was going to turn into. I will say, now that I've sort of peeked behind the curtain a little bit and worked with, you know, different directors and editors and the audio department, everyone there is super passionate about it, and everyone wants to do a good job, and it's exciting. Like, you know, when you're part of something like this, it's just exciting to know that everything you're doing is going to be enjoyed by so many people, and it just makes everyone bring their A game. And not only that, but Fortnite has, it exists in a way that's sort of ever evolving. And so,
yeah,
I mean, you see people complain about this, that they want the old map back or they want this or that. But the reason why Fortnite has this staying power is it's not the same game that it used to be. And they keep trying to reinvent it and add to it and try new things. You know, they'll try something and then it doesn't work and they take it out. And we do the same with the music. We'll say, okay, we're going to experiment with putting a little bit more music in the game, you know, and see how that works. Because in the beginning, it was all relegated to the commercials or a couple stingers. But in the game, it was no music because you want to hear the gunfire in the distance or you want to hear the footsteps. And over time, it's like, well, what if we put a little bit in here to kind of enhance the sense of threat around these new characters that are coming or something? So it's a constant back and forth. That's just, yeah, it just keeps everyone really engaged, I think.
The other big game you worked on of many is Civilization, Civilization 6, is that right?
Yeah.
And I am not a huge gamer. You are, right? Kind of even before you started working on them, you were a huge gamer?
It's funny. I was growing up, and then I sort of put it on the back burner, because when you're trying to start a career and when you're an assistant, you're already working 14, 15 hours a day, so there's not a lot of time left to go have these like great expansive adventures. I will say in the last few years, now that I've been doing a lot more work in games, I've made a point to, like, as part of my work, to make sure that I'm playing games. And I know it sounds tough, right? Like, oh, I have to go home. And...
Oh, no. No, believe me, I was at that where I was explaining to my wife why I needed to buy, I think it was a PS3 at the time. I needed to buy a PS3 and some video games for my career. And she wasn't buying it at all. But I was like, no, really, I have to play these games. I don't know what's going on here. So you kind of had a working knowledge of the gaming landscape. How did Civilization come about? How did it come about where you were working on
Civilization
that game?
Is a case where it was from that core group of guys. It actually was my friend Chris, who was, after he was in San Diego, he went back to New York and he was working at this company, Firaxis, who's, you know, they've been around forever, and they just needed some help. They had a main composer of Civilization, this guy named Jeff Knorr, who's amazing, and he's the perfect guy to be sort of leading that project, because he gets really into researching all these different countries and cultures and using traditional instruments and trying to be as authentic as possible and as respectful as possible. But he's a little bit more of a traditional orchestral guy, and so the way that the game works is when you get into the last era of time, it becomes modernized, and they wanted to give it the Hollywood film score treatment of, let's bring in the big cinematic drums and the synths, and we're no longer doing the classical traditional orchestra. We're taking that and then bringing it into the next evolution of what sounds a little bit more contemporary. And so because I was doing stuff at Remote Control, they bought that I could bring that to the table, and I've been doing that ever since.
You're still at Remote Control?
No, I haven't. No, but I mean, the aesthetic carries over.
Yeah, absolutely.
As much as I try to move beyond things, you know, there's certain things that you're born with and ingrained with that will just stick with you forever.
And so last year, you worked on XCOM Chimera Squad.
So that was the same company. That was also Firaxis. And XCOM has been around for a while, and they have sort of a tried and true legacy, and they've got a established soundtrack, and they've got a, you know, they've got a vibe and a thing to it. But they wanted to do sort of a spin-off game that allowed them to, you know, take the training wheels off and try to do something a little bit off the beaten path. And with that, they wanted to just try a different sound. So they wanted to do something a little bit more electronic and a little bit more synthy, which I wouldn't admit this at the time, but I don't think I'm particularly good at those things. I enjoy it, but it's I wouldn't say it's my strong suit, but it was fun. So I worked with this synth designer, this guy named Drew Jordan, who we talked about the concept and we talked about sort of the palette that I had in my mind, because I'll know where I want to get to when it comes to synth sounds, but I won't necessarily know how to do it. So
that's always the challenge with synth. Like, you know the sound you're looking for, and then you go searching for it, and often you find something you like better along the way, and then you take over that sound.
Right. I mean, then there's the guys who do like the Eurorack stuff. And I mean, you know, Henry, you worked with Henry. Henry's a great synthesist. But these Eurorack things, you'll spend a day trying to come up with some sound, and it might be like just completely different from what you thought you were going to get. And it might be cool, but then what do you do with it? You record it and you save it for later because you still have to deliver the cue, and that sound doesn't work for it.
Yeah, then you end up with hard drives of sounds that you have to go through one day. And and then you realize you need the sound and you can't find it, but the deadline is cooking. It's like, well, I guess I'm going to have to try and recreate it because, you know, I got to deliver this by midnight. So, So as somebody... And I know many of our listeners, we mainly talk about film scores, but somebody trying to get into video game scores, besides the games that you've worked on and the friends you have, could you recommend a couple video games that you think would be good, not overall good scores, but good for people that are just sort of tipping their foot in exploring the video game music world? Is there any ones that you can think of offhand?
There's a game, this might have been 10 years ago now, a game called Dead Space, and there's been some sequels to it, but I remember when that game came out, and it's like a space horror movie kind of vibe where a lot of the game is based around darkness and you don't know what's around you until you see it. So there could be a alien 2 feet behind you, but until you turn the camera around and you see it, there's no indication that it's there. And it sounds like a simple thing, but when you're talking about the tech that goes creating a system that does that, I was blown away when I saw that and I experienced it.
It sounds pretty horrifying, actually. I don't know if I would want to play that at night.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, like, cinematic is sort of the wrong word for something like that, because it's immersive, it goes beyond almost. That because you're, it's a visceral experience when you turn around and it's right in your face, and then suddenly the music kicks in high gear. So just from the perspective of checking out what well-implemented sound and music can bring to a game, I think that's a great place to start. I mean, there's so many. I think that the advice would be find a game that you're interested in, and like a genre that you respond to, and then pull it apart. So a lot of games, you can go into the menu and turn down either the dialogue or the music or something. So take everything out and only listen to the music, and then play through a level and see, when does the music change? Is there a loop? How long is the loop? Is there a transition from this to that? You know, what are they doing?
That is such a simple thing that I've never done. I've never turned the dialogue off or adjusted it. Wow, I'm gonna literally do that when we're done. That's
it helps if you've played the game before, otherwise it can get really confusing.
I mean, my strategy for all video games is just to run, spin, and shoot wildly. So there's not a lot of, like, I don't think dialogue's gonna help my strategy much, but I think it'll help to be able to hear the music a lot. So
we'll be right back.
Well, great. Do you have any other projects coming up that you can talk about? I know a lot of times there's NDAs involved and things like that, but is there any projects that you can talk about coming up?
That is unfortunately the truth of the game world.
Nope,
is
tight-lipped.
I've got, I'm halfway through a couple different games right now. I've got another kind of interesting project, but they're all locked behind NDAs, and you know, if I tell you, I will never work again.
Well, no, it's good to hear that, you know, with the pandemic starting to kind of crushing everything over the past year, it's good to hear that composers are still working and projects are now picking up again. Luckily,
you know, I have to say I'm really fortunate. Yeah, no. Sorry to cut you off, but I'm really fortunate to work in games. Because they didn't stop. You know, everyone else, production was shut down, and in games, everyone just brought their computers home. And there was a little bit of a learning curve, and I'm sure there's a lot of security issues that had to be worked out of how do you still work on a centralized server. But you know, where there's a will, there's a way. And thankfully, so much of what we do can be done without being in person.
Yeah, and I imagine just like, you know, all the home video platforms, the video game industry probably actually got a bump maybe last year because everybody's home and
I think that's
playing
right.
them. So, wow. Well, that's very, very interesting to hear. And I'm glad that the video game industry is thriving. And yeah, it seems like it's becoming less exclusive. Composers are starting to switch back and forth between video games and film/TV more and more these days, and it seems like the video game designers are making it that way, and the production staff they realize these are musicians and they're not sort of technical guys. They're not in the business of inserting the loop in their exact right spot. They're in the business of creating the music for the loop or creating the music for the scene and telling the story, I guess, more than anything.
Yeah, and I would say the other side of that that I think is exciting is there was a trend in 10, 20 years ago to have a Hollywood sound, and you would hire a big-name Hollywood composer to come in and write a theme and maybe deliver a few tracks, but most of them had never turned on a Nintendo. You know, they have no idea how these things work. And what's happening now is a younger generation is taking over film and games, you're getting people that grew up with games. So they, you know, I love film and I love games. And to bring an aesthetic of film into a game, but understand the unique challenges and needs of, you know, interactive audio and how all that works. Like it's an exciting time.
But you just put the image in my head of John Williams, like playing Mario Brothers. I don't know if that's a thing. Marcone just kind of swearing at the screen in Italian. Well, thanks so much, Phil. I really enjoyed this discussion. Do you have any parting thoughts for our listeners or anything like that? Anything you want to say?
No, I just want to say thank you to you and, you know, to all the listeners for caring about what I do and what we all do. And, you know, we wouldn't be in this position if it wasn't for enthusiastic fans and enthusiastic players. And I'm just really fortunate to get to do what I do.
Well, again, I'd like to thank my guest, Phil Boucher. Do you want to give out your any social media handles or anything like that, website information?
Sure. My website is philboucher.com, simple enough. And I think my Instagram handle is just Phil Boucher, but I'd have to double check that.
Sounds great. All right. Well, thank you so much to Phil. And again, I want to remind our listeners to check out our Patreon page, patreon.com/HookedOnScore. You can get some extra episodes and extra film reviews up there. And again, thank you to Phil. And we will see you next week on another episode of Hooked on Score.
All right, everyone. That's our show. Bye.